partner in and chair of Drinker, Biddle & Wreath's Employee Benefits and Executive Compensation Practice. Welcome to DBR's new podcast series, ERISA at 45. During this series, we will explore how ERISA and related laws have impacted the employee benefits landscape and what you should be thinking about in the months and years ahead. Today, I'm speaking with Brad Campbell, a partner in our Washington, D.C. office, and we are talking about the current legislative and regulatory environment surrounding ERISA. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks, Sarah. It's good to be here.
As we look at this being the 45th anniversary of the enactment of ERISA, how have we seen the legislative and regulatory environment surrounding ERISA-related laws evolve over the years?
Well, as you point out, Labor Day coming up here is the 45th anniversary of President Ford signing ERISA into law. And not surprisingly, it was a very different employee benefits landscape 45 years ago. The most obvious example is the 401k plan didn't exist when ERISA was first passed into law, and now it's become really the primary retirement savings vehicle for most American workers. In more recent period, and obviously there's a whole host of things that changed over the course of that period, but I think more recently what we've really been focusing on, say the last 10 years, have been issues related to access to plans. How do we get more plans to be offered? How do we get more participants to participate in plans when they are offered? And probably the biggest inflection point or sea change, whatever you want to call it, was back in 2006 with the passage of the Pension Protection Act, which facilitated automatic enrollment of workers and automatic escalation of their contributions. And the Qualified Default Investment Alternative Regulation, or QDIA regulation, which went along with that to give a set of investments that people could be defaulted into as part of those automatic enrollment programs. And those have been incredibly successful. We've really moved the needle. You know, we have 10 years or so of good data showing what happens, and it's been very successful. Many more participants are participating. You know, a typical company maybe had about two-thirds participation when it was an affirmative choice. That goes up to over 90% quite often for plans that do automatic enrollment. So that's been very successful. And the other issue, of course, is how do we get more plans to be offered? You know, we have some substantial fraction of workers who don't have a plan at work. And we've seen several efforts, both at the federal level and at the states, to try and increase participation in retirement savings opportunities. One of the big changes recently we've seen, and this is sort of a trend generally, is states becoming more involved in what heretofore have been largely federally, exclusively federal issues, is automatic payroll deduction IRA programs at the state level. We've seen those in California, Illinois, Washington, Oregon. Those programs are starting out. There's litigation about them, whether they're permitted by ERISA or not, but they're moving forward. And that's going to set up some tension down the road, I think, between whether employers want to offer, small employers offer 401ks or go with those payroll deduction programs. But the theme surrounding all of those is how do we get more access to retirement savings at the workplace? And that's been one of the most consistent areas where we've seen a lot of change in recent years.
Let's talk about what's happening in D.C. right now, specifically in Congress. We've heard a lot about the SECURE Act. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that proposed legislation does and how it might impact employee benefits?
Yes, and that's actually been, so far, a true success story and kind of a remarkable feat. We actually had tremendous bipartisan agreement on substantive legislation that made it through a very otherwise hostile and divided legislative body. Chairman Neal of the Ways and Means Committee and Ranking Member Brady have been working together for quite a while, regardless of who is chair, and obviously that shifted here this year, so now Chairman Neal is chair and Ranking Member Brady is back in the minority. But they've continued to work together, and we had a unanimous bill reported by the Ways and Means Committee, and it went through the House, 417-3. And it's a package of 20-some specific provisions that each target aspects of retirement savings and change the taxation in ways that are almost universally beneficial. That's one of the other surprising aspects of this package is there's really not that much that employers or workers would actually have problems with. Most of it is very beneficial. For example, it would increase the retired minimum distribution age from 70 and a half to 72. It would eliminate the age limit on making contributions to IRAs. It establishes an increase in the auto escalation limit in the safe harbor from 10% to 15% to facilitate facilitate even more savings in those programs. It would establish a safe harbor for selecting an annuity provider so that we could have more retirement income options in defined contribution plans as a form of payout. So there's a lot of very good provisions in that legislation. Passed the House again, 417-3. Unfortunately, it's run into some barriers in the Senate. And part of the problem is the Senate would need to pass the bill by unanimous consent. All 100 senators agree, or else the Senate would have to do its own bill. And that would be a very long and time-intensive process. But unfortunately, we haven't been able to get all 100 senators yet to sign off. There's some individual provisions that affect particular states or even issues sort of unrelated to retirement issues that are in the bill that have caused several senators to block its progress. So it's not clear whether this legislation is going to pass. If it does pass, and there is still opportunity for that, it's most likely to happen in one of those big end-of-the-year omnibus bills where Congress puts together all the unfinished appropriations business and other must-pass legislation, so-called must-pass legislation. It could still fit into one of those and become law, but we'll see. It's kind of an up in the air at this point whether we're actually going to get that outcome from Congress or not.
We're also hearing a lot of headlines right now about prescription drug costs, surprise medical bills. What can you tell us about what's happening in Congress relative to health plans?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's actually been some substantive efforts made to make some significant reforms, particularly in the Senate, in the Senate Health Committee. The chair there is working on legislation. As you say, surprise billing is one of those issues that caused a lot of consternation. In brief, the issue is, let's say I go to the emergency room. My plan does cover that, but I'm out of network, which, of course, I couldn't choose because who knows where my emergency happened. And so I'm on the hook for whatever isn't covered by my plan. And the hospital, it turns out, has extremely high prices for various things. That's sort of the surprise and surprise billing issues, legislation to potentially address that. I think what's important here is that these are real efforts, but I also think it's unlikely we're probably going to see any of those pass in the near term. One, it's a lot of real significant public policy questions to work out. What's the best way to do it? The other, of course, is that healthcare is a big feature in the presidential elections coming up. And there's even bigger questions being asked there. You know, will we do Medicare for all? Will we retain the Affordable Care Act largely as it's currently in place? Will we expand private coverage in a different direction? Those are all issues that are being debated at a much higher level. So I think what we can see in the Senate is progress and real debate about real issues, but we're probably unlikely to see any substantive healthcare legislation pass until we know what's going to be, who the next president's going to be and you know, what their priorities might be, his or her priorities might be.
What can we expect to see from the regulatory agencies in the coming years?
Well, there's several very significant events going on at the federal and the state level. So on the federal level, we just had new financial services regulation from the Securities and Exchange Commission, regulation best interest for broker-dealers, new guidance for registered investment advisors. And those have retirement plan implications as well, particularly when you're talking to retirement plan participants about how they should invest or whether they should roll over from their accounts. So at the federal level, we have that going on at the SEC. At the Labor Department, we also have a renewed push for an expanded fiduciary rule. So just to review the bidding briefly as to what happened, we had in 2016, the Obama administration put out a significantly expanded regulation that would govern when someone is an ERISA fiduciary, when they're giving advice to plans or participants. That went into effect in 2017 and was vacated by the Fifth Circuit and federal courts in 2018. So that rule no longer applies. But the DOL is looking to revisit that issue, especially now that the SEC has acted with new regulations. And for example, that regulation best interest goes into effect next June. What DOL is likely to do, and we don't know for sure because they haven't made a lot of official pronouncements, but just sort of reading the tea leaves, we think there's two real components to what DOL is likely to propose and probably propose in the near future, in the next several weeks or months. Is one, a new class exemption similar to the best interest contract exemption that was in the 2016 rule that was vacated. And that's necessary because it allows, for example, advisors to be compensated in connection with rollover advice It allows some variation in compensation, which is a real sticking point for ERISA plans. So if you meet the conditions, it makes things a little easier to facilitate the provision of advice. We think DOL is going to propose a new exemption similar to that, but the conditions will likely dovetail with the SEC. So you'll be able to, if you're an SEC-governed advisor, registered rep of a broker-dealer, whatever it might be, you'll likely be able to get one-stop compliance shopping. What you're doing for the SEC will probably, and FINRA, will probably be substantively what you need to do for DOL for its exemption. So we'd have some coordination between those two agencies. The second part that we're likely to see is DOL revisiting when you're an ERISA fiduciary for giving rollover recommendations to participants. As a result of the DOL rule being struck down, most rollover recommendations are not covered by ERISA unless you are a fiduciary advisor to the plan the rollover is coming from. And DOL is likely to address that and say again that, at least with respect from rollovers from plans to IRAs, that is now all, again, ERISA fiduciary advice. That's what we're anticipating. We'll see what the actual reality is. And of course, the details will be in how they write it. So until we read it, we won't know exactly what's good or bad about that proposal, but that's likely to come as well. The one other issue I would point out here is we're seeing the states start to take a more aggressive role in this space, and that's setting up a bit of a collision course with the federal government. And that's going to be a potential problem for us in the short term as well as the long term. So, for example, we've seen Nevada, New Jersey, Massachusetts, New York initiate, or in New York's case, complete regulations that would address the fiduciary obligations of all sorts of advisors. And while those are more broad based, they would also have some income or some effect on retirement plans as well. The issue there becomes if the states start doing this on a conflicting basis, you get a patchwork of different state laws, how do we effectively operate on a national basis? That's one of the fundamental reasons ERISA was put in place, was to provide for the uniform administration of plans across state lines. And we're likely to see one of these states move and cause a real problem with the question of who's the primary securities regulator. Is it the federal government or is it the states? And are those state laws preempted? So there's a lot of moving activity in the states and the federal government on these issues, and we'll probably see some major events happen in the next 18 months.
Sounds like we've got a lot to look forward to in the coming years and months. What are your parting thoughts for those listening today?
Well, basically, we're still in a transition period. We had some major changes initiated by DOL. We've had on the regulation of advice to plans and the interaction with plan participants and rollovers. We're going to have some more changes there. And so we're sort of in between regulatory environments. And that's going to cause, obviously, compliance issues and trying to keep track of who's regulating you and for what. And that's, we have what's going on now, and then we're going to have what's going to happen a year from now. And so there's a lot of activity there. I guess one of the other points I'd look at is opportunities for forming plans. One of the things that's in the SECURE Act and that DOL is also doing, albeit in a different way, is looking at making it easier for small businesses to pool together into one plan with one 5500 and one audit, so that there's economies of scale and a reduction in the amount of sort of work that a small employer has to do to set up a 401k plan. And in the SECURE Act, there's a provision they call pooled employer plans, which is pretty broad. It would allow these unrelated employers to get together. It would allow financial services entities to sell that as a product or a service, and really, get that process more streamlined and overcome some of the barriers that are there under law and regulation today. The Department of Labor actually recently issued a final regulation called Association Retirement Plans, which is a similar concept but a little more limited. It would allow a trade or professional association or a geographically based association to be sort of the organizing force behind all those small employers joining together. So if you were a member of the association and the association chose to do so and offer this plan, you could be a participating employer in that 401k plan. That DOL regulation is final. It goes into effect at the end of September. It is going to potentially offer some new opportunities, although it's not clear yet exactly how it's going to shake out the marketplace. But it is more limited. You have to go through an association that exists for a purpose other than providing this benefit. A financial services entity can't sponsor that. It has to be something going through that association. It doesn't address some of the IRS issues, the so-called one bad apple rule, which basically in a nutshell is, what if one of those participating employers doesn't meet the qualification requirements under tax law? Is it just that employer's problem, or is it the problem of the whole entity? And DOL, of course, can't address those IRS issues. So there are some more limited facets to it, but one way or the other, we're getting a change there that is going to offer some new opportunities in the marketplace, especially for small employers. So there's a lot of activity there.
Thank you, Brad. We really appreciate your insights.
Thank you. Good to be with you. And, you know, everyone hold on. You're doing a good job providing benefits. We're helping you do that. We all are working together to do the right thing here. And we're going to have to get through this period of a bit of uncertainty to get to the other side. But ERISA has made it 45 years so far, despite radical changes in what it covers. And I have faith that it can go at least as long again, or at least to my retirement, which would be one of my goals. So thank you, everyone.